We're going to present here Friday mornings two series of shiurim. The first one is shidduchim and dating, and the second one is preparation for marriage. And when we last gave the series about 11 years ago or so on shidduchim and dating, I remember discussing one or two of the issues with the Rosh Yeshiva of Philadelphia, Reb El Yosvei. And I mentioned to him that we're giving a series of shiurim on shidduchim. So I could hear him smile on the phone. And he said, you know, Reb Avram, he said, in Philadelphia we should also give shiurim on shidduchim. He said, it's pastnished, you know. It's a little hard to do, put up a sign, we're giving a shiurim on shidduchim. He said, but the truth of the matter is that it would really be a very important thing to do, even in a formal way. The reality is that there's a lot of information, critical, crucial information, and many people have a lot of the information, but it's rare that everyone or even one person has all the information. And sometimes we can be missing just one critical piece and it can make a very big difference. And because what we're talking about is maybe perhaps the most important decision that you'll ever make in your life, choosing a wife. And your life is going to be different, very simply put, your life is going to be different based on whom you marry. If you marry person A as opposed to marrying person B, you're going to have a completely different life. Your family will be different, your children will be different, all of your circumstances in life will be different. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky once mentioned to me this very point, but in a different vein. He pointed out to me that there was an extraordinarily talented and capable individual who could have made a very, very big contribution to the Torah community. And because of the wife that he married, who had limiting circumstances, she was a very ill woman, therefore he had to tend to her. He had great limitations in terms of ultimately what he was able to accomplish. And I'd like to share the flip side with you. I remember for many years knowing an older bacher who was a wonderful person, a very fine bal midas, but he had a very, very flat personality. And it was almost hard for him to smile or to get any emotion out of him. He was just a very, very flat person, very sweet, nice guy. And he dated year after year after year after year. There was a problem here. And after many years, well into his 30s, he finally became a chassan. And I went to the chasna, and I heard a very coarse comment being made by one person to another as the kala, who had a severe physical handicap, limped down the aisle to the chuppah. And I heard one person say to another, I wonder what's wrong with him that he had to marry a handicapped girl. And I was shaken by this comment. But I learned afterwards that this young woman was a fabulous, fabulous, upbeat personality. And she was a dynamo of positive energy. And apparently she saw something in her husband, potential, that was only potential, but not yet realized. And I was astounded about 15 years later to read a large ad in a national Jewish newspaper giving the award of the Rebbe of the Year in the greater New York area to this chassan. I couldn't imagine him being a Rebbe and keeping kids awake. And maybe it was 20 years later. But he won the Rebbe of the Year award. It was amazing. And there's only one reason as to why he was able to accomplish that. Undoubtedly. He had the potential, but it was masked, camouflaged, and inhibited. And he married the kind of woman who was able to help bring that out in him. And he made an enormous, enormous contribution and is still making it to his life and the Jewish community. So the person that you marry can have an incredible impact and change everything about who you are and what your life is. And therefore, it's that critical of a decision. As such, if there's anything we can do to help guide Talmidim towards making a better decision, understanding the process of how to do so, to do it more safely, to lower the risks, avoid mistakes, then it's our chiyuv, our responsibility, and here we are. The second series, which is preparation for marriage, is obviously crucial as well. We're living in a society where failure in marriages is the norm. Single-parent homes is the norm. I had occasion to speak under the chuppah once at a chasana, at a wedding where the majority of the wealthiest membership of the wealthiest conservative congregation certainly in New York State, if not the United States of America, were in attendance. There were mostly millionaires there and perhaps a couple of billionaires there. So under the chuppah, when giving advice to the chassan, I made a statement. And I said, it's easier to be financially successful than to be a successful husband. And right after the chuppah, the president of Park Avenue Synagogue, Mr. Robert Antler, came over to me. And he said, Rabbi, I was shaken by what you said. Because I'm a financial investor, and I won't look at a client unless he invests a minimum of $1 million with me. So all I deal with are the financially successful people. And there's a great percentage of my clients who have made wrecks of their personal lives with failures in marriages. So I personally experience the truth in what you said. And I'm committed, having heard what you said, to work harder to be a better husband. Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch says, you can look at it in the very beginning of Parsha Shemois, Ish uveisai ba'o. Each man and his household came to Mitzrayim. Rav Hirsch says that the yesod, the foundation of what it was, the bedrock of support of Klal Yisrael, that allowed them to be able to weather all of the challenges that they had in Mitzrayim, were the fact that they had strong homes, they had strong marriages, and were able to build ish uvei. So that's why it's the introductory phrase to Parsha Shemais. Now, there's a large collection of statements in Chazal that speak of the polarization, the two extremes of having a good marriage or a good wife, or a bad marriage, a bad wife, or bad husband. And I'll just share a few of them with you, because here we'll see just how important it is and how much it can affect a person. Kama toiva isha toiva. The Gemara marvels how incredibly good is a isha tova, is having a good wife. And then, kama ra'a isha ra'a. How incredibly bad it is for a person to have a bad wife. The Gemara says, Kol she'ein lo isha, somebody who doesn't have a wife, listen to this list. Shorui b'loi simcha, dwells without simcha. B'loi bracha, b'loi toiva, without any, he doesn't have joy, doesn't have bracha, doesn't have any good. B'loi toira, b'loi chayma, without a wall, and perhaps this means a wall of protection against Yetzer Hara. B'loi shalom, without peace. So all of the essential things that a person would want, the person wants bracha, he wants good, he wants Torah, he wants simcha, he wants protection from the Yetzer Hara, he wants shalom. Without a wife, one has none of these. Apparently, with a wife, when it works well, one has all of these. Incredible, extreme polarization. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces the idea in Parshas Bereishis of creating a wife for Adam, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, E'ese loy ezer kenegdai, the famous phrase. I'll make him an ezer, a helpmate, kenegdai, opposite him. So Rashi says, zacha, if he was zaych and privileged, so ezer, she'll be a helpmate. Loi zacha, if he wasn't, then kenegdai lehi lachem, to wage war. So either she's on your side, or she's your opponent. Again, we find the same concept of extremes. It's either great or awful. The Gemara says, Shalom b'neihem, if there is peace between husband and wife, then Shechina b'neihem. The Divine Presence is with them. Ein Shalom b'neihem, if there isn't peace that reigns there, then Eish oichalasam, then fire consumes them. So it's either the Shechina or it's the fire. Again, same principle. The Gemara says, B'ma'arava amru. In Eretz Yisrael, they used to say when somebody got married, famous Gemara, Matzah, I might say. Did he get a matzah in past tense or might say? Or did he find in present tense? And the Gemara references to Psukim. Matzah, did he get a matzah? Matzah isha matzah toif. If he found a woman, he found goodness. Or did he get a maitzei, which is a reference to the pasukim, maitzei ani mar mimoves esoisha. I find bitterer than death the woman. So if you just collect these few ma'amore chazal, what emerges is a picture of either incredible, an incredibly positive relationship, or an incredibly negative Gehenim type of relationship. So if so, we're talking about Devarim Ha'emdim Berumai Shel Olam. We're talking about matters which are of the greatest personal effect on every single individual. I learned many years ago, I had heard, that in Lahavdil, Freudian psychology, that does a lot, who did a lot in terms of interpreting dreams, there was a classic symbol that most people come up with when in the symbol of a dream they mean to refer to a woman. Classic symbol that everybody sort of reinvents. What's that symbol? A cat. In other words, any Freudian therapist, especially when hearing a dream and hears that there's a role of a cat, knows that it's a symbol of a woman. Why is that? Because to the human mind, to our experience, the cat has two symbols. One is the warm, purry, lovey, furry kind of closeness, the sweetness. And the other is when the cat gets angry and spits and claws. Because those are the two opposites that are sort of contained within the framework of our understanding of a woman. Now, here comes the question. So how do you get the good woman? Okay, how do you avoid the bad? How do we get on the right side of this and avoid the problems? And there are really two segments to the answer. One of them is finding the right wife. The second is being a good husband. The first, which is finding the right wife, really has two elements to it. There is the ruchniyastika, there's the spiritual, the metaphysical, alpi chazal, and certainly alpi kabbalah, the concept of me Hashem isho le'ish, the concept of the pasuk that says it's from Hashem that a specific woman marries a man, the gemara that says arboim yom kaidim yitziris havlad, 40 days before formation, which means at the time of conception, Bas Kol Yeredes, the heavenly voice descends and says, Bas Pleni Lepleni. The fact that Alpi Kabbalah, an entire neshama, is really comprised of, as it were, two halves, the Zohar and the Nekeva, they get separated and they come down in the form of two bodies, the male and the female. And if they're Zohar, then those two halves find each other. As Chazal referenced a wife as an aveda, sort of a lost object that you have to go after, with many applications. Darko shalish lachzar achar isha. It's the way of a man to find the wife, to go after her, which actually has practical applications as well, in terms of who makes the moves, who does the traveling, and so on, which we'll learn about later. But it's the whole concept of basheret. It is somewhat controversial. It is somewhat controversial because there is a Gemara that challenges this in several places. Masechet Sota, if you want to look it up early, and in the beginning of the Masechta, the Gemara challenges this because are we mezaveg? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu mezaveg a person lefi zuchusai, based on his merit, or is it this concept of basheret mihashem? It's an automatic thing. And the Gemara says, "Habezivug Rishon, Habezivug Sheni." Depends if it's the first marriage or the second marriage. The pshat level would be the first marriage is the one that's basheret, but not necessarily the second one. Mekubalim say that there's a different meaning to this Gemara, possibly, and that is zivug Rishon would be the first time the neshama comes down into this world, as opposed to the ensuing times. And since the Arizal has already said hundreds of years ago that most neshamas that come into this world are not first-timers, so maybe the concept of basheret and the specifically designated other half doesn't really apply. So it's somewhat controversial. There were some great gedolim who didn't really operate on the plane of the idea of basheret, but it's very comforting if you do believe in the idea of basheret. And in fact, I heard from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky the following statement, which really supports it. He said that even though the Torah says that when we're in Golos, Va'anoichi haster aster esponai, I'm going to totally hide my face from you, nevertheless, even though we're living in a period of hester ponim, where Hashem sort of really hides and camouflages himself, he said when it comes to shiduchim, we have gilui ponim. When it comes to shiduchim, invariably, there is that shidduch story. We see the hand of Hashem operating within the framework of shidduchim in gilui panim. And that would mean that at the very least, we have a special, special siyata d'shmaya, that if a person is doing things right, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us how he's assisting us, and that would lend credence probably to the concept of mei Hashem isha le'ish, if not exactly the idea of basheret. And although I have literally hundreds of stories, I'm going to share two of them. The second one is a more recent one, and it has a number of parts to it, which I'm intentionally sharing with you, because there are multi-lessons of chizuk to us in that story. But the first one is an older one, whereby a medical doctor from South Africa came to me, needed some assistance, and he told me he had just gotten married a month before. So I asked him, can you just tell me, and I don't know why I asked, maybe it's so that I should share it with you today. And I asked him, can you please tell me how you met your wife? So he sits back and smiles, and he says, I'll tell you. I was a medical student in Johannesburg, and I decided that I'd like to take a summer off and go to Ar Samech in Yerushalayim, which I did, and I was enthralled. So when I graduated, I decided to take 6 months off and learn. I took 6 months off, and you know how these things go. 6 months became a year and a half. And for the last half a year or so, I started dating. And I didn't find what I was looking for. I was ready to come back to South Africa, and my father called me up. My father said, son, I want you to go to America and find a nice Jewish girl. And I told my father, but Dad, you know, I can't stand Americans. I don't think that's where I need to go. And my father repeated, he said, it was like strange. He said, my son, I want you to go to America and find a nice Jewish girl. It sounded like a mandate from my father. So, kibbutz of aim, I decided to listen to him and try it out and maybe learn in a yeshiva in America. And I found out that Chaim Berlin might be a good place, and they accepted me. When my Rebbe in Ar Samech Yerushalayim heard that I'm going to America, he said, you know what, I wouldn't send you to Switzerland, but I have a fabulous girl in Switzerland. I want you to see this girl. So do a stopover in Zurich. And the Rebbe arranged the family for him to stay at. He stayed at the family in Zurich. He saw this girl once or twice. It wasn't for him. And therefore he went on to the next leg of the journey, came to New York, and enrolled in Yeshiva Chaim Berlin. 2 weeks later, he gets a letter from Switzerland. And the letter from Switzerland is from the host family that he stayed at. And they said, you know, we were very impressed with you. And we have what we think is a fabulous shidduch for you. It's a girl in Washington Heights. But since we can't speak the shidduch long distance from Zurich, we know of a great shatchan in Washington Heights. So why don't you call her up, tell her that we suggest this girl, and she should speak the shidduch. So he said, I went and I called this woman. This woman spent a half an hour with me and said, I can't speak a shidduch if I don't know who you are. Tell me a little bit about yourself. And at the end of the half hour, this woman said, now that I hear who you are, I would never speak that shidduch to you. However, I have another idea for you, who is a descendant of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. So happens. And she said, that's the shidduch I would speak to you. He said, and I married that girl a month ago. Now look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to do. Look at all these steps of Hashkacha Pratis to lead him through Switzerland, etc. But I'd like to share a more personal and more recent story with you that, as I said, has a number of limudim. And the story goes like this. My second daughter, Shendi, who is today married, living in Yerushalayim with two children, was a single girl, and she wasn't up to Shidduchim yet, but she visited Eretz Yisrael, visited an older sister in Eretz Yisrael. And I had a son, my third son, Tzvili Melch, was learning in the Miri Yeshiva at the time, and he decided to take my daughter Shendi to a great tzaddik, whose Rebbetzin was also a very famous tzaddikus, Reb Chaim Brim, Zecher Tzaddik Levracha. And his wife was related to us, and my daughter Shendi wanted a bracha from him. So she asked her brother in the Miri Yeshiva, take me to Reb Chaim Brim for a bracha. So Tzvi Elimelech takes Shendi to Reb Chaim Brim in Yerushalayim, in Mea Sha'arim, for a bracha. And what's the bracha she wants? She wants a shidduch. When the time comes, pretty shortly, she wants a shidduch, a good shidduch. So Reb Chaim Brim says, look, if you're prepared to do something, then I'm prepared to give you a very special bracha. He says, I don't believe in this dating 30, 40, 50 times like they do in America. He says, I want you to tell Tzvi Elimelech, I want you to find out everything about the girl beforehand and go out once, and then I'm prepared to guarantee her that she will marry the first bachar she meets. So Tzvi Elimelech says, we're not Hasidim. That's not our style. My father doesn't hold of that approach. It doesn't. Reb Chaim, that's not going to work. So he says, okay, he bargains. He says, two dates. So Reb Chaim says, my father doesn't believe in it. He doesn't hold that this is the right way. It's not going to work. So he says, okay, maximum three dates. And if she's willing, if you're willing to undertake this, and no more than three dates, then I'm willing to assure her she's going to marry the first bachar she meets. No, and he gave her this bracha. So Melch says, I can't guarantee. Well, you know, how can I? Okay. It's now, I don't know how much later it was, 6 months later, a year later, I don't know. A woman calls my house. Never heard of the lady. She calls, she says, is this Katz? So we said, no, this is not Katz, this is Braun. So she says, do you have a daughter, Shendi? So he said, yeah. And my wife gets on the phone and talks to this woman. She's a shatran. Calling cold. She thought she's calling Katz, because she had on her list the Shendi Katz. So my wife, I hear her talking to this woman for 10 minutes, total stranger, and I hear she's describing who we are and what kind of people we are. And I'm looking at my wife, like, why is she spilling her guts to a total stranger who doesn't even know whom she's calling? And it, you know. This woman called back for the next 2 months. Every second week, she called back with some kind of an idea for a shidduch. And she was way out in left field all the time. And I hear my wife is talking to her. I say to my wife, why are you talking to this lady? I mean, she has no shaykh, she's a lady in Brooklyn. Finally, after 2 months of this, my wife gets frustrated. And she says, you know, you're barking up the wrong tree. We're not looking for anything like anything you have suggested. And just out of the clear blue sky, she says, Do you know Tirza Puritz? Do you know the Puritzes in Brooklyn? So the woman says, no, maybe I heard the name. She says, we're looking for a family like that. Now, background. When my wife went to high school at Yeshiva of Brooklyn, she had a teacher, Amora Feldman, a single girl. During the first year and during ninth grade, the teacher became a kal and got married. So my wife went to the chasna. Who did she marry? It was like a double simcha, because she married the son of a butcher in Williamsburg, who was an old Galatianer Yid, and my father-in-law, my wife's father, was also a butcher in Williamsburg, and he was from Galicia. And her teacher's chassan was the son of her father's, like a brother, like his best friend. So here, her teacher gets married to the son of her father's good friend. So she went for two reasons to the chassan. That teacher then became Mora Puritz instead of Mora Feldman. And she taught my wife in ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, and for the next 27 years or so, they maintained a relationship. They talked once or twice a year. Sometimes my wife had an issue with Shaduchim, she would consult with her. She said, these are plain, straightforward, taradika, normal, nice people. So the Shatran says, do the Puritzes have a son? Mora says, I don't know if they have a son. I don't mean them. I'm just trying to give you a dogma, an example of... She says, I'll call up, I'll find out. My wife says, listen. Don't start, you know, don't say that you spoke to me, because I don't want to ruin the relationship over here. Well, an hour later, she calls back. She says, they have a son. His name is Chaim Elimelech. She says, well, Elimelech, the grandfather was Melech Puritz. Now, there's one other little point here. This Mrs. Puritz's mother, the old Rebbetzin Feldman, knew how to speak Russian. And before coming to Ar Sameach, 21 plus years ago, from 3 years before that, 24 to 21 years ago, I was the menahel of a Russian school, Be'er HaGoel, in Brooklyn. And one of the greatest assets I had was Rebbetzin Feldman was like the counselor to the girls' high school, to the Russian, newly arrived Russian girls, because she was a queen of a woman, an older woman who had lost her husband years back. She spoke Russian, highly, highly intelligent woman. So she had worked very closely with me, and she's the grandmother of this boy. So, like, you know, we don't want to start up and ruin a relationship over here. She calls back. She says, they have a son, and he wants to see your daughter. How do you get such a quick answer like that? She says, when I said to the Mrs. Puritz, I'm suggesting a girl named Shandy Braun from Muncie. So Mrs. Puritz asked two questions. Is the mother's name Miral? So the chaplain says, yes. She says, I have one more question. Is the father's name Avraham? So the chaplain says, yes. She says, we're interested, but just give me 1 hour. And an hour later, she calls back and says, what did she need the hour for? Another piece. A month or two before, a kala that my wife had taught, recently got married, called my wife and said, I have a shidduch for you, for your daughter. So she said, wonderful guy, didn't even say his name. But the bachur's name is Avraham. Now, my name is Avraham Mordechai. Now, the Sefer Hasidim writes, Rabbi Yehuda Chassid says, don't marry a man who has the same name as your father. Don't marry a woman who has the same name as your mother. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, and others do too, that if one party has one name and the other has two names, if the girl's, the daughter is Sarah and the boy's mother is Sarah Leah, then it's okay. It's not considered the same name. In some circles, they won't touch that anyway. My wife didn't even bother consulting with me. The moment she heard that the bach's name is Avram, she said, you know what? It's not Bashert. Because my husband's name is Avram Mordechai, even though but we call him Avram. And I come from Hasidic background. I will not tolerate, I can't handle a bach whose name is Avram. So she just told me about it afterwards. It ends up, this Avraham was a son of Mrs. Puritz's sister. And they were interested in the Shidduch, but since it was rejected, and in fact, they even told us, the Shatran said that they went to Rav Shor's Rebbe, the Rachmistrifka Rebbe, and asked the Shaila about the Avraham Mordechai and Avraham, and he said, it's okay. So my wife said, maybe the Rachmanis Tzofker says it's okay, but it's not okay with me, and I'm not interested. Okay. Now, Mrs. Puritz's sister, Aleilah Shalom, she passed away in the interim. She was talking to her sister, Mrs. Puritz, and she says to her, you know, this shidduch wasn't basheret for my son. Maybe you should look into the shidduch of Shein Dibron for your son, who's learning in Eretz Yisrael. So she said, that shidduch is not for my son. This had happened 2 months before. She said, my son has payas like this. My son is a real, you know, I mean, he learns his head off, but he's not a mesudadik guy. He's just all over the place. Rabbi Bruin is a very stiff, formal gentleman, you know. He's not, you know, trim beard. He's not going to go for my son, if he takes out his beard, it's going to go down to his payas. My son is a Yerushalmi. You know, I just don't see the shit. Okay. Now, but otherwise I'd really be interested, you know, okay? Says, now 2 months later, Shatan calls up, do you have a son? Yeah, his name is Chaim Elimelech. Well, I have a girl named Shandy Bruin. The father's Miral. The mother's Miral. Yes, the father's Avram. She knows the father's name is Avram, because that's why her sister's son couldn't get to first base with this. So the Shatan says, she says, I'm interested. Just give me 1 hour. She just talked to her sister to get, you know, updated. She's interested. This is a Wednesday. On Thursday, they go out. They go out. They sit in my dining room, okay? And my daughter has some sveikas. She's not so sure because he's talking about living like the Chafetz Chaim. She wants to know if they have any furniture in his parents' house. It ends up totally unbeknown to us. The parents are very wealthy people, but extremely modest people. Real B'nai Torah. Okay. But, so I tell my daughter, look, if you're not interested, we'll just cancel. She says, no, I'll see him again. Okay? They go out a second time. They see each other a second time. After the second date, we don't want to tell them, but we drank a l'chaim in my kitchen and we danced. We said, this is it. What they did in their kitchen, they didn't want us to know about it. They drank a l'chaim and they danced. Okay. And the third time, they saw each other and it was a done deal. I think they even, technically speaking, went out a fourth time, but when they were out, the mechutanim, we were already planning the l'chaim. Where and when, and they were sort of upset. He didn't have a chance to ask her because it was... So we got in the three times, and it was the first girl that he ever met, and she was the first bachur, he was the first bachur that she ever met. And they live in Yerushalayim today. He learns up a storm. And besides that, he runs a little chesed project that he started a year and a half ago. And he married off 200 yesaimim and almanas, children of basically orphans in Yerushalayim, the poorest of the poor, by heading up an organization that they started that sort of pretty much run from their home called Simchat Tzion. So, we go back to Eretz Yisrael after they're married. And we got to get to Reb Chaim Brim to give him a yashikai. He's a Bal Moifas. I mean, the man gave a bracha that was unbelievable. So we catch up with Reb Chaim Brim 11 o'clock at night in his daughter's sukkah. And I say, Reb Chaim, you're a Bal Moifas. You're a miracle worker. So he says, nah, look at the recover, look at the preparing. So he says, nah, you don't understand. He says, I believe that the first shidduch that is suggested to anyone, unless there's a pircha, unless there's something really horribly wrong. He says, I hold that the first suggestion, the first shidduch that a person meets, that's the one that's bashert. He said, there is a problem. He said, I'll tell you what the problem is in America and to some extent in Eretz Yisrael too. He said, and I'll give you a mashal. He said, a kid comes home, he says, Mommy, I want shalosh shudas. She says, okay, you want some challah and gefilte fish? He says, no, Mommy, I want challah shittas. So she says, do you want tuna fish salad and cucumber salad? So he says, no, Mommy, I want challah shittas. She says, do you want herring and potato salad? He says, no, Mommy, I want challah shittas. And this goes on and on. And he says, you know what the problem is? He doesn't know what challah shittas is. That's what the problem is. So here the bachur comes along and says, I want a shidduch, I want to get married. They offer him this, they offer him that. He said, no, I want a shidduch, I want a wife, because he doesn't know what he's looking for. And it's very important for a person to know what he's looking for. That was the brilliant escape of Reb Chaim Brim when I complimented him on being, tried to accuse him of being a miracle worker, a Balmbifus. But the concept is, and this is only, although this is an elaborate story with, and by the way, don't get any ideas of going out two or three times, unless you have a bracha from Reb Chaim Brim, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And you can't get that bracha anymore, okay? Because that's a very dangerous thing to do, and I wouldn't recommend it, okay? It's high risk. But, as I said, there are hundreds of maisim, there are hundreds of stories that I could share with you, and that many of you know, all attesting to the concept of Gilui Shechina and a special Siyata Dishmaya when it comes to Shidduchim. And therefore, the concept of Basheret Me Hashem Isho Le'ish requires that you do a certain Ruchniyistika Hishtadlus. And that Hishtadlus is davening for a Zivuk. And particularly Kapitel Kuf Chof Aleph in Tehillim, which is the kapitel where David HaMelech says, Me'ayin Yovoy Ezri, which Chazal understand to mean, from where is going to come my Ezer Kenegdai. That's an especially powerful tefillah for one to say the Chidah has published, there is published a beautiful tefillah from the Chidah specific for Shidduchim, but just reciting and davening in a heartfelt way your own words, and including the tefillah of David HaMelech, of Me'ayin Yovoy Ezri, kapitel Kuf Chof Aleph, can help a person be receptive to that Gilui Shechina and that bracha from Hashem to be able to find the right one. The second element is the Hishtadlus. The Hishtadlus, putting in the effort of working very hard once you get a wife to make her into an Isha Tova, to make the relationship such that the relationship is going to be filled with Shalom and Midas Tovas, and mutual positive atmosphere. And since many people unfortunately make a lot of mistakes both in the process of choosing and then later on in the marriage itself, that's why we have this two-part series. One, helping with the process of choosing and understanding that more fundamentally. And then, once we're done with that, better tools towards being a better husband. And getting to the first series, the outline of the first series, which is the one we're starting now, on Shidduchim and dating, should encompass the following areas. First, a Torah perspective on the purpose or purposes of marriage. The second would be a self-inventory of readiness to get married. And I strongly advocate that when we come to that part, everyone, whether you do it here in person or through the tape, take pencil and paper in hand and go through approximately the half a dozen issues that we discuss and sort of rate yourself, and then go to a Rebbe mentor and say, this is how I see myself, but I could be subjective, and I think that I'm pretty ready. I might need to shore up a little bit in this area. Do you agree with me? Am I off? Do you have any recommendations? Please be brutally honest with me. Do you think I'm ready based on my self-assessment? The third is how to get started practically. Tools for dealing with shatchanim. Don't give this tape to shatchanim. Fourth is the shidduch process. The practical do's and don'ts of what's expected. And I'll call that problem avoidance. And I'll share with you that this area, which is the do's and don'ts, is the one of the most sensitive areas, because at least 4 times out of 5, if not 9 times out of 10, when someone gets into trouble in the dating process, it's because he violated one or another of the guiding principles that we talk about in the do's and don'ts. And as recently as within the last 2 days, I got 2 calls from shatchanim who were very, very upset about snags and problems that people created. And it's all because they didn't follow guidelines that would have been much more helpful for them and wouldn't offend people and wouldn't get them into trouble. And the fifth is what to look for. obviously there isn't one mold for everybody, but developing the tools of developing criteria so that that you have good ideas and pretty straightforward and clear ones for yourself in terms of what to look for in a shidduch. And lastly, how to decide. What kinds of, what are good perspectives, good models, and what are kinds of things that you should have been through already in order to be able to make a healthy decision. And let's get started. Purpose of marriage. If you ask most people why they want to get married, if you stop for a moment and ask yourselves to think, why do I want to get married? Probably some or most of the following items would be included in the list. I want to get married for companionship, to eliminate loneliness. I'm lonely without a soulmate. Emotional closeness and the ability to express emotional closeness. It's a basic human need. A kosher outlet for a man's natural attraction to women. Help me cope with and deal with a yetzer hara. Fourth, or another, a sense of security. Everybody at one point or another wants to establish a home, a base, a place, a niche, a place that I call mine, beyond a bed in a dormitory. Yeah? So security, home, family, children. Another could be the comforts that go with a home. Meals, my apartment, my house, get my laundry done. You know, whatever other benefits can be accrued by having the structure of a home and a wife. And lastly, although this is often not thought of so consciously, more subconsciously, someone who would sort of compensate for my inadequacies, sort of fill in the gaps where I'm missing, and I have somebody to be mashlami, to complete me. We can talk later on about whether or not that's a healthy approach, but nevertheless, it's an operating principle, especially subconsciously, for many people. I'm looking for somebody to make me feel whole. Those are probably most of what goes on in people's minds when we attempt to put together a list of why it is that I want to get married. And the truth of the matter is that the entire list is pretty much comprised of secondary benefits, but not the primary reason to get married. And therefore, we're missing the primary reason. Everything that I listed, although they're true, except for maybe the last one, to some extent, needs further explanation, but although they might be true, but they're thinking that way is just because we're products of the culture in which we live. And I'll share with you a Torah perspective. When the Torah speaks of the creation of Adam HaRishon, we have three references in Parshas Bereishis. Two, the phrase B'Tzelem Elokim Osa Osai, in the image of Hashem. And that's a very difficult phrase, because how can you have an image of one who's invisible, Kadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't have a body? What does B'Tzelem Elokim mean? And there are many mahalchim and interpretations. Rav Dest, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate giver. The entire life we have, and the entire existence we have, is based on Hashem constantly giving. The ultimate giver is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The human being has two parts, and there are many ways we can break it down. You can call it the guf and the neshama. You can call it the yetzer hatov, the yetzer hara. But basically, we have a dichotomy. The guf wants to take or enjoy, which is a form of taking, and the neshama wants to give. Why does the neshama want to give? Because since HaKadosh Baruch was the ultimate giver, the B'Tzelem Elokim means we can be B'Tzel in the shadow of Hashem and emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The guf has a need to take. The neshama has a desire and a need to give, to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And every person, to some extent, needs to take and has the capacity to give. And the defining definition of success of a person in this world is what is my ratio of giving over taking. Am I essentially a taker, a lokeach, or am I essentially a noisein? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate noisein. Do I follow after my neshama, or do I follow my guf? Do I follow my yetzer hara, which wants to take, or do I follow my yetzer tov, which wants to give? And to the extent that I expand my ability to be a giver, to be a noisein, I am becoming more and more of a tzelem elokim. And if man was created to be a tzelem elokim, then our goal in life is to learn to become greater givers. And what's interesting is, discovered Rav Tauber, that in two out of the three psukim, when it says b'tzelem elokim, it says zachar unikeva bara isa. That Hashem created them male and female, which gives us the clue in creation, in Bria, as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a zachar and nekeva. Because if b'tzelem elokim means that we're created in the image of Hashem to develop the capacity to be balei chesed and givers, then the development arena is zachar and nekeva. The fact that there is marriage between a man and a woman, and there is a constancy to the need of giving. You can't just be nice now and then walk away and not see her for a month. You've got to be nice in the morning and nice in the afternoon. And you've got to be nice tomorrow and a week later. And you've got to be nice a month later and a year later and a decade later. And to the extent that you're not, you're going to suffer. So the greatest testing and development grounds of becoming a Tzelem Elokim are rooted in the Zachar and the Keva relationship. And if we then go back to ask a question, what is the ultimate purpose of marriage? The ultimate purpose of marriage is not so that I can have a family, not so that I can have companionship, not that I can get my emotional, physical, spiritual, whatever needs taken care of. Those are true byproducts of the relationship. But they're not the purpose of the relationship. The purpose of the relationship, if married, the purpose of getting married, is to become a greater Baal Chesed. Now, the Mashgiach of Philadelphia years ago, Rav Mendel Kaplan, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, whose book, rather, the book about him published by Artsko called Rav Mendel is one that I strongly, strongly recommend, written by Rabbi Yisrael Greenwald, who taught here years ago, and who is today the outreach director of the Kollel in Melbourne, Australia. Rav Mendel Kaplan was once asked to give a chasn shmuz to a chasn. And in his almost inimitable, sharp way, he said, I don't know what purpose there is to give a chasn shmuz. I don't understand what a chasn shmuz is all about. He said, it's very simple. The Gemara says, ishtai, two words, ishtai kegufai. His wife is like himself. No, if your wife is like yourself, it's very simple. When you're about to say or do something, would I like it to be said or done to me? Then do it to your wife. If I wouldn't like it to be said or done to me, then you don't do it. It's as simple as all that. What do you need a chasn shmuz for? Ishtai kegufai, that's all. He said, it's a two-minute chasn shmuz, and that's it. And although there's great depth to what he said, but as Rabbi Rakowski said, it's not so poshut. Not so poshut. And why is that? It's not so poshut because if a woman would be exactly the same as a man, then you could say whatever I like, I assume that she likes. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us drastically different. And when we talk about marriage, we'll develop this theme more. But I'll just outline it very, very briefly. And that is, there really is a gewaltig akasha. There's a tremendous heretical kasha that we can ask, if we're allowed to ask akasha on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That since the basic premise of marriage is that we need a man and a woman, an isha and an isha, and if we posit that men and women are so different that we're really incompatible, and the only way you can have a family, the only way you can produce a child is man, woman, child, that's what the family structure is all about. So why in the world did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this to us? Why didn't he have two similar people, like two men-like people, whatever they look like, but basically the same kinds of people, or two people like women, and just have them marry, and life would be that much easier. Then we could just follow Rav Mendel Kaplan's advice. Whatever I like for myself, I like for... And men and women are drastically different. And although they're different in many, many ways, I'll just talk about, I'll focus right now, briefly, on one of the crucial ways in which men and women are different. And that's the issue of seichel and lev, the issue of intellect versus emotion. We all know that women are often described as being emotional people. Men are often described as being rational people. And we need to understand it in the following way. Just like you can stand on 2 feet and put your weight on both feet, or you can shift your weight to your right or to your left foot, so too, both men and women have intellect, and we have emotions. It's just that most men, most of the time, operate on the intellectual mode. And we experience life, our feelers are the intellectual ones, the rational ones. And we can shift gears and become emotional, and then we might even become more gushingly emotional than a particular woman. Conversely, most women, most of the time, operate on their emotions. They experience life emotionally. Their feelers and intersectors of life are emotional ones. Can they shift gears and shift weight to the rational one, rational mode? Of course they can. And when they do so, a particular woman might be able to run intellectual circles around her male counterpart. But the reality is that most men operate rationally unless they change gears, and most women operate emotionally unless they change gears. And I'll just share two illustrations of this out of many. And one is the typical story of the newly married man, and he's invited to speak at his friend's Sheva Brachas the next week. So when he comes home at night, he takes out a couple of Sfarim, starts preparing a Dvar Torah, and he has them piled up on the table. And he's not finished. He just got started. Tomorrow night he'll continue. And his wife comes over to him, and his wife says, can you please put away the Sfarim? The dining room looks like a mess. So he says, why should I put them away? I'm just in middle, and tomorrow night I'm going to need all of these and maybe even a couple more. Would you mind if we leave it this way? And she looks down, and now tears come out of her eyes. And she says, you don't love me, do you? And he says, and he doesn't know where she's coming from. And what she's really saying is that my dining room is a mess. Could you imagine if a friend would come over and see that? She'll think I'm a schlump, and I don't care about my home. And every time I walk into this room for 24 hours, or whenever it is, I'm going to say my house is a mess. And she says to him, it would take you 5 minutes to put them away, maybe. Another 5 minutes to collect them again. Obviously, you care more about wasting 10 minutes than whether or not how I feel. Could somebody go out and ask them to stop blowing the leaves now because it's interfering with the taping? And what's really going on? It's very simple. The feeling that she has is very legitimate. It's a feeling of how I feel about my home, and that's very important to her. That's how she's operating. And what the perspective he's coming from is the rational perspective. And it's just like the guy who says, I don't think I need to get into pajamas tonight because I might as well sleep in my clothes because tomorrow morning I have to put them back on again. Okay? So why should I make my bed this morning if tonight I'm going to mess it up again anyway? And I know that men hold that way. Just look at the Arsameh dormitory. Okay? So he says, you know, why waste the time? I'm going to have to think. And the same could be with tools if you're in the middle of doing a project, whatever it is. And I'll just share one other little incident that occurred here in the yeshiva with a very sweet bacher from Rio de Janeiro. And he comes to me and he says, you know, I went out on a date last night. He said, and I had a remarkable experience. I said, what was the experience? He said, we were walking in Manhattan and all of a sudden this girl turns wide-eyed, terror-stricken, and she grabs my sleeve and runs. He says, I didn't know what to do. He says, so I ran with her. We ran one block. We ran a second block. By the third block, she calmed down and stopped, and terror-stricken, with wide-eyed, she says to me, did you see that? He says, no, I didn't see. He said, what was a hold-up? Was it a gang fight? What? He said, no, what? She said, a mouse. Now, the average woman is terrified of a mouse. The average man In fact, a woman called me up 2 nights ago and said, I left a message for your daughter. I know she called me back, but I couldn't receive the message because we moved out of our house because they discovered that there's a mouse in our house. So, most natural thing, you move out of your house because a mouse, and they called in the emergency, you know, called 911, and you know, the coming into thing. So, now, when there's an interaction between man and woman regarding a mouse, so what's the typical reaction of the man? What does he usually say? It's only a mouse. What else does he say? No, she says kill it. Okay. The average man says, the mouse is more afraid of you than you are afraid of the mouse. You are bigger than the mouse, etc., etc. What are we doing? What are the men doing? They're rationalizing. They say, look, you're getting overly emotional about this. Let me fix you. Okay? You have no reason to be afraid of the mouse because of reason A, B, and C. The man is coming from the rational perspective and she is coming from the emotional one. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said something extraordinary. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, the Gemara says, that Kishem Shepartsufehem Einon Doim Azelazeh, Kach Ein Deoisehem. Just like people's facial features are not similar, so too their thinking is not similar. Asked Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Pshita, isn't that obvious? We know that people don't look alike, which is why I can recognize everybody in this room. And we know people don't think alike. We know that too. So there are two non-chidushim. What in the world is the Gemara getting at? Said Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the Gemara means to say the following, possibly. Just like you're not upset or resentful at somebody else for looking different than you, so within parameters, unless we're talking about perhaps major apikursus and issues of belief, don't be upset with people if they think differently than you. And therefore the objective, getting to our ultimate answer of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made men so women than, different than men and women so different from each other, is because if the purpose of the relationship and the purpose of marriage is to become a Baal Chesed, if the purpose is not to be selfish, if the purpose is to be a Tzelem Elokim, if the purpose is to be able to be a giver rather than a taker and emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not enough to follow Reb Mendel Kaplan alone and to say, Ishtei Kaguf, whatever I like for myself, I'm going to do to my wife. You know why? Because projecting is too easy. That's not enough of a stretch. It's not enough of a development grounds. It's not going to give you enough capacity. You have to marry someone who is very, very different than you, who what your needs are not her needs. Someone that you really can't truly understand and comprehend. As the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, Rav Yitzchak Ruderman, once said in an intimate moment with Talmidim, he said, I learned the whole Bavli, Talmud Bavli. I learned Yerushalmi. I learned Shulchan Aruch. I learned thousands of tshuvas. But I never fully learned to understand the Rebbetzin. Because a woman is an enigma to a man. And if af al pi kein, despite the differences, we can reach out and over span the gap and be able to make her happy despite the fact that I don't truly understand necessarily why it makes her happy. The very fact that I know that doing this does make her happy, and she knows that I don't understand it. She knows it's not my need, it's only her need, and I'm leaning over and bending over to provide that to her, that is going to make for a very, very appreciative and happy wife. And because of that, she's going to bend over backwards and make you even a happier man. So, the purpose of marriage requires that men and women be very, very different. And the more different we are, the more of a stretch it is, and the more of a reach it is, and the greater Baal Chesed I'm going to become. So you can ask me, Akasha, you can say, Rabbi Braun, if that's the case, and the more difference is, why should I look for somebody who agrees with me? Why should I look for somebody who has similar values to me? Why should I look for somebody that I like? I should marry somebody that I think is ugly. I should marry somebody that I vehemently disagree with in everything. I should marry somebody whom I really hate, and then learn to overcome that and love it. Trust me, there are enough differences when everything seems to be fine There are so many differences and so many new chidushim and twists and things that you never expected that I'll quote Rav Mordechai Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who quoted his Rebbe, who told me that he heard from Rav Yeruchim Lvovitz, the Mashgiach in the Mir Yeshiva. And in the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, there were Talmidim who came from all over Europe. And he said, try your best to marry someone from the same culture. The differences between individual people and the differences between men and women are so great, there's such challenges, that if you superimpose on top of that a new culture, it's just going to make things hard. It doesn't mean that it's impossible. But if you can, try your best to marry somebody from within the same culture, because there's enough of a challenge the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it. We have to try our best to minimize the challenges, but and then when they're there, to rise up to those challenges. And Emir Tz Hashem, we will continue at the next time.